Today is August the 7th, and I'm Dr. Reginald Carter. That's the 2007. And Bob, you want to give us your full name?
My name is Robert A. Johnston, Jr.
Okay. Bob, what I'd like to do is start out with your formative years, where you were born and reared, and in high school and things, and a little bit about your family and your education.
Well, I was born in Washington, D.C., back in October 2nd, 1945. And grew up in the Washington area. Went to school in the public school system in Washington. And my dad and mom, they had a grocery business in Washington, D.C. And so I grew up in the grocery business. And that was my first exposure to the finances of running a business. And let's see, to keep it short, I graduated from high school around the Vietnam War era, and I spent 6 years in the Marine Corps, as a reserve, mind you. I didn't have to go to Vietnam. I never got activated for that. But I went to Benjamin Franklin University in Washington, D.C., which is a school majored in producing accountants, people that were going into the financial profession, and got my degree from Ben Franklin. And I went full-time for several years and then completed it part-time while I was working. I got married, so I had to start making money and as opposed to just going to school. So it took me about maybe a total of about 6 years to get everything done. And at the same time I was in school, I went to work for the National Cable Television Association, which was my first experience with associations. And I enjoyed that. I found working for associations interesting, and cable industry at that time was in its infancy and just starting to come on. And so I was able to see that develop. And I was there both full-time and part-time, probably about 6 years. And decided that it was time for me to move on. And I started looking around and replied to an ad in the paper for a comptroller for the American Academy of Physician Assistants. And my first time when I applied, I guess I was applying a little late. I got a phone call from Maryland shortly after I sent my resume in, saying that they had already closed off the interviews and we're getting ready to make a selection. And that's fine. I said I'd had my resume out for a number of job opportunities, so I just kind of scratched that one off. And I guess maybe it was about a month later, in February of 1978. I got a call from Maryland asking if I could come back out for an interview. That things had changed, and so I went out for the interview. Met with Dr. Fisher, Don Fisher, who was the first executive director for the Academy, and as well as Don, there was Mike Paturis, who was our legal counsel, and then the John Little, who was the CPA. Was taking care of the audit for the Academy, as well as the Association of PA Programs, better known as APAP. And I interviewed with them for several hours, it seemed like. And we really hit it off. I mean, I liked Don, and it looked like a good opportunity be the comptroller for the organization. So I guess it was maybe a day later, I got a call from Don offering me the job, and I took it. And of course, at the time I didn't realize that the Academy and the Association were going through some really financial woes. Maybe if I'd known that, I wouldn't have taken the job. But
this was 1978.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I started March 6th of 1978.
Yeah.
And the financial records were well in arrears. I mean, I guess maybe they were 5 or 6 months back. I had to get all the financial information, get things current. So I was working with the auditing firm to help do that at the time, because they were the ones who had the general ledger. And but also I had to prepare a budget. This was in March 6th. The annual conference at that particular in that particular year was going to be at the end of March out in Las Vegas at Caesar's Palace. Mm-hmm. And so my first month was spent really getting familiar with the budget and for both the association and the academy, and getting familiar with several government contracts we had, because we had to keep mm-hmm. those things going. And so it was it took several months to get things current. Mm-hmm. And we started to realize that, you know, it was the organization had been stretched a little thin. It was growing, and the revenue source was not growing with the same at the same mm-hmm. pace as the cost of operating the organization was. So we had to do we basically doubled the dues. I think it went from like $60 to $110, and the next year was a real Donnybrook. People were up in arms about the increase, but I said you either do the increase or you close up shop. Well, you think, you know, it's one thing or the other, because the organization could not continue on with the growth it was doing. I mean, the House of Delegates had started, the committees were meeting, and yet they had not enhanced the revenues at all to accommodate that, and so it was coming back to haunt them. But the dues increase went through,
And they had a good conference that year.
The Vegas conference was a good conference. Yet at that particular point in time in the history of the academy, it was not the revenue source that it ultimately became. That was kind of a learning process, because the annual meeting has always been the number two source of revenue for the organization.
And I believe the association got part of the revenues too.
In the early days, in the real early days, it was shared 50-50. Mm-hmm. And then it went from 50-50 down to, I think it was 75-25. And then ultimately, it ended up being, it all was coming to the academy. Mm-hmm. And of course, the association was confined in our office. It had always been part of the national office. In my mind, it was one big organization, not so much two organizations, although I prepared 990s for them separately and kept separate books for them and all the rest. The money was never intermingled, but...
You were the first person on staff that really had a financial degree and background, is that correct?
Yeah, the gentleman I replaced, he was in banking, but he didn't know anything about accounting and financial reporting, and that was one of the problems that I think Don experienced, was not knowing how we were doing. Mm-hmm. And of course, he was very busy doing the EVP stuff, and he was depending on the auditor and Scotty. I don't know if you ever mm-hmm. knew Scotty, but he was the gentleman who was in my position. Mm-hmm. And ultimately lost his job there. It was one of those things that when we realized what we had to do, mm-hmm. It was just a matter of getting the board to bless it. And it was a long discussion. It took everybody by surprise. Mm-hmm. And of course,
When did you begin feeling like the academy was finally getting on its feet financially? How many years did it take?
Well, once they increased the dues, that provided the stabilization that was necessary. And also putting in some control features that to get a budget that was meaningful, preparing a budget that was meaningful for we could live with it within the constraints that we had. And periodically, you had to go back to the House of Delegates and get the dues adjusted. We were doing it probably every third year for the longest time, and it was almost a routine because we were adding staff. The organization was growing. And when I started with the academy, the budget was, and this included the government contract we had, was probably about $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
And
the bulk of that was the contract, right?
Yeah, a lot of it was the contract. And we had probably 12 staff people, of which three or four were funded by the government contracts. Mm-hmm. So you're really talking about 9 staff, 8 staff that were really academy employees that were doing academy things. And of course,
who were the foundations that were involved when you came on board that had foundation money to?
Robert Wood Johnson Foundation was the, actually they, RWJ had money coming into the association of PA programs.
That's right, it had to come through them for tax.
Right, yeah. For tax purposes. And the academy had 2 government contracts, and so we had staff working on all 3 research programs, and really, I guess the RWJ money was kind of what helped establish the national office initially. They helped provide the core support needed to get things going. This was even before I came on with the academy, and we were working with a lady by the name of Annie Lee Schuster, and I got to know her very well and made a number of trips up to, I guess it was in New Jersey, that's where they're located, New Jersey, and to meet with them. But the grants, and they actually kept involved with the association for a number of years, more than they normally would, which was very good for the association, because it did provide some core money to help them.
Now, you started off as the comptroller. That was your title. And how has your role changed over the years? Well, for 30-some years?
It's kind of interesting. You know, as I think back on my job, the job has just gotten bigger. The responsibilities really are the same. And the title changed. It went from comptroller to director of finance to vice president of finance and chief financial officer. Well, I mean, I basically, you know, in the early days, I was chief cook and bottle washer. You know, I yelled out the commands and then I carried them out. So it was one of those things that I had a part-time bookkeeper working with me, and but really, you know, I took care of the investments, but what there were at the time, it wasn't a whole lot, but bought a lot of CDs back then, and managed the money and prepared the budgets, the financial reports, did all the administrative functions in the office to make sure we had all the equipment we needed.
So how large of a staff do you have now working in the financial?
Now I have 7 people in my department, and 5 of those are financial. I have an assistant who keeps me straight, and so I don't have to do all the preparatory work. I have people doing that for me. I do the analytical aspect of it now, and which is good. Mm-hmm. And but it just, everything is bigger now. We had a less than $1 million budget when I came to the academy. Now we're looking at $16 million plus. Mm-hmm. We didn't have 2 nickels to rub together when I came to the national office, and now we're working on a reserve that is over $14 million. So I've seen some significant changes.
And that's excluding the foundation's
money. Yeah, right. That it was just growth within the organization. Every year you have a little bit of a budget excess, and ultimately your net worth increases. Your net worth increases, and that naturally means that your cash reserves increase, and that generates the opportunity to earn more money. And when you're investing the money, you know, you make money for your budget.
And you have a building now that you didn't have.
Yes, that's my pride and joy.
I was going to ask you what some of the things you take pride in as far as...
I feel very proud about the building. It was one of those things that... this was after Don Fisher left, and Peter Rosenstein was the exec. And I tried to convince him at the time that we ought to look into buying a piece of property as opposed to leasing space. We were getting ourselves into a stronger financial position. We had some money in the bank so that we could have looked at that possibility. But I never could convince him on that. And when, you know, I looked at a number of pieces of property over in the Roslyn area where we was our second location. Actually, it was our third location.
You went from Crystal City to Roslyn?
Yeah, went from Crystal City to Roslyn. Of course, we were originally down on L Street.
All right.
And that was the first office. And then we moved to Crystal City, where I came on board, and then we moved to Roslyn. And we were in Roslyn for probably about five years. And when Lynn May became exec, I got his ear about buying as opposed to leasing. And we started looking around the properties, and this particular lot was vacant in Old Town, and the developer wanted to put a building up and was looking for someone to buy it. And so we talked to them and worked out a deal. And because we were coming into the city of Alexandria, we did an industrial revenue bond financing, which was a very low interest rate financing for nonprofit organizations. And as a matter of fact, the Academy, being a C6, was the last C6 to receive an IRB loan.
Okay.
And that was back in 1986. And so the building went up in 87, and we moved in. I guess it was about early 88. And of course, I know we had a big groundbreaking here when we bought the property.
How much money were you able to raise for the building, was it?
Oh, my goodness. We went out to members and corporate members, corporate partners, soliciting money. And I don't remember the exact dollar amount. It's been a while back. But we got good participation in the buy-a-brick type thing, you know. And we have the Hall of Presidents. It was, everybody seemed to be real excited about it.
And the building won some kind of award.
Oh, yeah, well, it's won a number of architectural awards here in Alexandria, and the city just loves this building. It's kind of a landmark building now in the city of Alexandria. And then, of course, in 97, we added on to the building. We doubled the size of the office building at that time, and it enabled us to stay here. We were able to buy some land behind the building, and we expanded it, and we got the same architect to come in, and I mean, it looks like the same building. I mean, you can't tell where the old ended and the new began. So he did a wonderful job, and I think, you know, the PAs love the building. I think we get a lot of PAs who come in visiting the city, and they come by the office to see the office.
Right.
That's always makes you feel good.
Well, that's one of the crown achievements that you take a lot of pride in. Other than getting by those first few years of having to increase the dues and those things, what's been the other challenge or a couple challenges that you've had to face in your department from the financial aspect?
I think it's just growth. The challenge is when I came to the Academy, it was me and a half-time person. You got to recognize that as you grow, you got to. The challenge is to bring on competent people to work with you, and I've been very fortunate in my time here that I've been able to come by some real good support staff, and without them, I couldn't be successful. As you grow, there's too much work, so you have to have people come in and do things that you were doing before yourself. And Julie Brim, she's my right-hand person, and she takes care of a lot of the nitty-gritty for me now, so I can look at the bigger picture of the finances of the organization and think about the budgets and the things we have to do. So it's getting away from having to do the debits and credits and looking at the bigger picture. You have to learn to say, well, that's not exactly the way I would do it, but it gets the job done. You can't be micromanaging people. And I think that's always been a challenge not to do that. When you hire someone to do a job, let them do their job, unless they're not doing it right. You know if they're not doing it right. But if they're doing it right, then how they get it done is up to them.
Looking at staff, and you've seen people come and go, and you've seen leaders here, such as different executive directors and so forth, and I know we can't name everybody, but are there a few people stand out in mind and folks who have just really contributed a lot over the years to the organization?
Well, each exec brought a different quality to the organization, and I think they filled a void at that particular point in time. I mean, Don, he got the national office going. Peter, he was not here very long, but I think from a financial management aspect, he was good for the organization at the time, because he was very tight-fisted with the money, and he would not just arbitrarily approve things. So he was good at the time. Lynn, I think, brought more of the legislative side of things that we needed at the time. And then, of course, Steve, he came on and he had the health policy background. And so he obviously, he's been here almost 14 years, so obviously he was doing something right. So now we're going into the new, looking for a new EVP, so hopefully we'll find someone who will fit the niche that's needed now. As far as staff I've worked with, I have to look at people like Nicole and Marilyn, Shelley. They've been real staples here, and and good gracious, you want to talk about knowing the history. You talk to Shelley and you talk to Marilyn, they're the ones that remember stuff. I mean, they remember more things than I've forgotten, I always would go to them to ask the question, what did we do back then, what was going on? But they just are a resource.
Yeah.
But, I mean, and we have a lot of, I thought Bill Finnerfrock was a wonderful staff person here. I mean, he worked in government affairs. He was well respected by the chapters. I mean, I can remember the annual meetings. I mean, the chapters were always after Bill to come talk to us and come see us. And so, I mean, he was
well that was the next thing I was going to ask about the PA leadership. Again, you've dealt with a lot of board members and leaders. Any folks there that stand out in mind?
I have to. Dan Fox was the president when I was hired. Yeah. And he was getting ready to go off the board, and Jim Canepa was coming on. And I can remember sitting in that first budget meeting, and I brought up the subject of dues. And, of course, Jim says, we're not going to increase dues in my time. Well, never say never. Jim Canepa, got the baptism of fire. And basically, we said to Jim, we have a serious situation here. I mean, if the organization's going to continue on, we're going to have to increase the dues. And we sat down and talked with him, and he grappled with it a little bit, but then finally agreed. Mm-hmm. And I have to give Jim credit. He was a real solid performer on the board and convinced the board that it was necessary. I mean, we had financial records to prove it. But Jim has always been one that I remember well, goodness gracious, of course, Bruce Fitchhandler.
Well, yeah, Bruce has been treasurer longer than anyone else, I guess.
Well, Bruce, he's been treasurer, he's been Speaker of the House, he's been president, and he's been treasurer. in that order. And I think I'm going to get at least two more years out of him mm-hmm. before he decides to retire. But I think Bruce has been a very solid volunteer for the profession, and he's been kind of that voice in the wilderness sometimes, sitting on the board, which he tends to make the board stop and think a little bit. And goodness gracious, others that I've known over the years, of course, Reggie, you go back a little ways. You sat on the ABAP board for a number of years, and of course, being as a program director. But
well, I know there's too many to mention, and we've had great leadership. Yeah. We all can be proud of.
Yeah.
Looking at the PA profession, you didn't know what a PA was, I assume, when you came over and interviewed for that job. You just knew they needed financial.
Well, exactly. Right? I mean, I was interested in doing association work. Mm-hmm. It's what I liked doing. And I did a little reading up on PAs, I really didn't, know exactly what role they played mm-hmm. in the health care.
What have you seen the major barriers that the PAs have had to overcome during your 30-some years here?
I think the name recognition. In the early days, when I would say who I worked for, they'd say, well, what's a PA or a physician assistant? And I would explain. I don't have to do that anymore. Mm-hmm. And I talk about PAs and, oh yeah, I see a PA. Mm-hmm. I much rather see my PA than my doc. And I hear that more than not. I mean, mm-hmm. it's just the PAs have served a real role, and I have to say, it's made my job working for this profession. I mean, I have a whole lot of respect for the PAs and what they do, and it's made me stay here mm-hmm. more than anything else. I mean, I love my work. I love the people I work with. I also love the PAs I work with as well. Mm-hmm. And it's been a real blessing for me to have the opportunity mm-hmm. to do this. And so it's one of those things that, when you're dealing the type of work I do, it's the same stuff day mm-hmm. in and day out. It becomes very repetitious. But mm-hmm. I enjoy doing it, and I enjoy mm-hmm. working for the PA profession. So mm-hmm. it's been a real joy for me.
What do you see as some of the future challenges for PAs? I'm talking about the professional PAs. You got any sense of where you think they need to be going or areas that they should consider going?
Well, I think that healthcare is going to drive that. You see PAs now, you're looking at the international side mm-hmm. of things. Mm-hmm. And PAs are in all branches of healthcare. I mean, from general practice to surgery to geriatrics to mm-hmm. It's just on and on and on. They get into specialties in emergency medicine. So I think we're just beginning to see the growth in the PA profession, and it's, I guess, not to lose their roots, where they came from, what they were created mm-hmm. initially by, Dr. Stitt, to serve and fill a void that existed. And I think that they do a great job in that. And as we see the population of PAs grow, they will continue to expand. But you'll see PAs still in the general practice environment. They're working in the rural areas, in the urban areas, providing great health care. Mm-hmm. I always look forward to the awards ceremonies every year at the conference and to listen to what some of them are doing and the sacrifices they make financially to do what they do. That's quite a statement for the profession. And always gives you a good warm feeling inside that you're working for the profession that does that. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. that's great stuff. And I've had the opportunity to meet a lot of good PAs. Don Peterson, I have a lot of respect for him and what he does.
You've seen the foundation go from the educational research foundation without much money and little research money in those early days to what it is today. What's your perspective of the foundation and how it's progressed over time?
It really is just starting in my mind. I mean, in the early days, they didn't have two nickels to rub together. So really the board of the foundation was made up of past leaders of the academy. It was the past president. And it was about five members on the board. Mm-hmm. And of course, we'd meet and talk about what we were going to do. Of course, there was no money to do it with.
Right.
So, and when I present a financial report, it was a one-page,
mm-hmm.
and not a whole lot going on, except, they met, So.
And if you got a check for $500, you were really just...
So, and that was how it was for the longest time. It was just kind of very stagnant. It wasn't going anywhere. And I think that as we got corporate folk involved with the foundation, they brought ideas in that helped create a core of support, financial support, and then we started getting out to the members, and the members started making contributions as well, and then name recognition, to get grants and get support for programs that they were doing. It's been a very slow process getting into scholarships. Now they've created an endowment fund, several endowment funds, which is very exciting. And now they have endowments totaling over $1 million. And also are financially stable. So you've seen that expand tremendously. I think it's just a matter of, they got involved with the back when the big tidal wave, tsunami. The tsunami. We were able to get involved with that and raise some money for that. And of course, Katrina, when hurricane hit New Orleans, we were able to get involved with Chevron Corporation and partner with them to raise some money and help some of the clinics down there. So. Things like that are very,
A warm, fuzzy feeling.
Oh, yeah, it's great stuff. It really is.
Well, what about this other organization now that's become a supporting organization?
Well, yeah.
PA History Group. How's
that
going?
That's, again, here, of course, you know more about it than I do. We're seeing that organization from its infancy. And it's been a lot of growing pains there.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those things where you try and raise money to do things, and sometimes it doesn't come in quite as hot and furious as you'd like. But I think that with the Academy getting involved in it now, that's going to help. The Academy has been very supportive of the history program from its inception, and very glad about that, because I think it's a meaningful thing to do. We're trying to get the tax status changed with the IRS, and we're still waiting on the IRS to bless that. That's going to be an interesting process to see how that evolves over the coming years here, because you have some core supporters in it, and if we can build on that, we're hoping to do that and use some of the resources that the Academy has to do that. And of course, working with you and Donna and getting the history of this great profession recorded. So
we're off and running.
Yes, I think so.
I know, you know, that there's probably other recollections that you have along, and we've talked about challenges and things that you've been involved in that you're very proud of, but is there other things that come to mind when you're thinking about your 30 years of service with the academy or with the profession that we haven't hit on? That
You know, it's been 30 of the fastest years of my life. I knew that. It's just nothing stands out for me. I mean, it's been one of those, I've seen things develop, evolve. I mean, I've seen APAP grow mm-hmm. to the point where they decided that, you know, they needed to establish their own office, mm-hmm. and they've done that, and that's very exciting to see that happen, and that they become a very stable financial organization and a very, you know, representing the educational arm of the profession. And, so that I get satisfaction out of that, seeing that happen, because mm-hmm. I can remember in the early days as with the academy, things were tight, and so to see that this evolve for them, it was very gratifying, and so and yet, you know, they're just down the street, so we still see them.
Oh yeah.
Yes. But,
well, I really appreciate you taking time to interview with us today, and thank you for your 30-plus years of service to the Academy.
Thank you very much. It's been a real joy for me. I just have a few more years to go here. A few more years to go, and then I'm going to follow you down into Carolina somewhere.
Sounds great. Thanks.